Hey, it's Paul Baines from GreatDad.com, and I'm here again in my weekly series talking to dads about all different subjects related to parenting and sometimes not related to parenting. And this one is something, this the, today I've got a topic that's always interested me, but I've always kind of shied away from it. And we're going to be talking about franchising with our guest, Irving Chung. Nice to meet you, Irving.
Nice to meet you, Paul.
Well, we talked for a second before we got started about the preconception that I always had about franchising. Growing up, I'd always heard, like you, people would franchise would be franchising a Pizza Hut. That was probably the one that I heard the most about, was, you know, getting a pizza franchise. And I'd always heard that, you know, dads would just get worked to the bone. And in the end, yeah, maybe they had the freedom of owning their own thing, but then they became basically a slave to, you know, another thing. And it wasn't a really good solution for a dad who wants more time with his family, which is kind of what the show is all about. So why don't we discuss, first of all, what modern franchising looks like, because it can't possibly be that bad. So
No, it's not. You know, it's funny because, you know, we all know McDonald's as the grandfather of franchising. And today it's evolved to almost every industry and category. There's over 4,500 plus franchises out there. There's something in almost every category. I have children's enrichment. I have pet care. I have senior care. I have restaurants, of course, and food concepts. I have health, you know, fitness concepts. I mean, I have things that are for solo entrepreneurs, business coaching, recruiting, executive recruiting, e-support, right? So I have things that are big businesses, right? So, you know, I have lots of options, right? That's the beauty of franchising, is really penetrated every industry. Part of, you know, what people still think about, 99% of the people I work with, they're like, first thing they think about is fast food. Oh yeah, Subways and Chick-fil-A and McDonald's.
Right.
And it still is, you know, the predominant thing you think about. But part of what is the joy of meeting with someone like me, or the joys I have with meeting with other people these days, is really enlightening them on what their options are. Because honestly, like a lot of people, and I personally would never want to buy a fast food restaurant. It's high cost, lots of employees, mostly high school kids that are unreliable, you know, and low margins, you know, high expense, low margin. You got to sell like 3,000 hamburgers a day to make a buck, you know, which you can do, but that's a lot of work, a lot of capital, you know.
Right.
And there are a lot of businesses that I want to do a lot less work in, which I think is lead us to part of the subject that we want to talk about, right, is time commitment.
Right. So maybe we should back up and hear what your story was, how you got into it. I assume
Absolutely.
You didn't start as a small child doing franchising.
No, you know, it's funny. It's funny how things go full circle, right? My parents are Chinese immigrants. And like a lot of immigrants, they come into this country saying, you know, you're going to do better than me. And what I want you to do is go to college, get a degree, and be a professional. Okay.
Right.
Now, not only did they want me to go to college, all of my siblings and I were challenged to go to an Ivy League. So it's not even a college, it's going to the best college, right? Well, I didn't make it to Ivy League. I made it close. I made it to Colgate University. My brother made it to Columbia, so he's the golden child, right? You know, he also became an engineer, which my father wanted. So as an engineer, a doctor, right? They, for some reason, Chinese folks don't like lawyers, but it's like doctor or engineer, you know, it was never a lawyer. Anyway, so I went into marketing, went the corporate route. My parents owned a Chinese laundry. Okay, so I'll back up a little bit further into the old immigrant story. My father joined the military for World War II, earned him the right to become a citizen, earned him the right to get the GI Bill to get college education. Well, after the war, after college, he couldn't get a job. He ended up opening a Chinese laundry, right? So people are like, oh, you know, boy, why is it that Chinese always open restaurants or laundries? Well, because of the 1800s, they passed a law that said that was the only business Chinese can open. Right. I mean, you're in the Bay Area. I mean, it started with the railroad, right? Because there's so many Chinese that are like, hey, they're taking all the jobs. Well, let's restrict what they can do. They can only do Chinese laundries and restaurants. Well, a guy came into the laundry one day, said to my father and goes, hey, whose degree is that on the wall? My father's like, it's mine. He goes, well, why are you running a laundry? He goes, well, because no one will hire me. And he goes, well, you know what? Here's my business card. Call me on Monday. And he happened to hire my father.
Well,
you know, all it takes is one opportunity
sure.
to change your life, right? Now, my mother continued to run the laundry as my father went on to become a professional. And my father designed the John F. Kennedy Airport Terminal, for American. He's done some big projects. He worked in the World Trade Center, big firms. So he kind of saw the American dream. With that, he encouraged all of us to go to college and get a job. So I, of course, good kid, did that. I worked in marketing, loved it, right? So like in the beginning, you get into college, you're like, wow, someone's going to pay me to do this? This is awesome, right? And I did advertising. So I did big campaigns. Coca-Cola was my client. Cola Wars, I was involved in big Super Bowl ads, celebrity ads, multi-million dollar productions. I mean, like, I still get excited thinking about those days, right? My claim to fame was actually as I got more senior in the business, I developed the original Got Milk campaign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that continues to be the most award-winning, tagline in marketing. And even with that, as I got more senior, I realized that corporate's not all what it was cut out to be. I woke up one day with heart palpitations. I literally leaned over to my wife and said, I think I'm having a heart attack. I need to go to the ER. And the good news, bad news is, good news was I wasn't having a heart attack. The doctor, after a full day of testing, was like, you didn't have a heart attack. You had an acute anxiety attack. But let me tell you have all the signs of a heart attack, right? High blood pressure, you're overweight, you're, stressed, all this stuff. Typical of a senior management executive. And it made me reflect. I'm like, you know what? I looked at my bank account. It was not full. I have three boys. I did not have college paid for. I didn't have free time. I was working 50, 60-hour weeks.
And you're in New York City, where it wasn't cheap.
New York City, yep, that's where I started. And then up in San Francisco, but even in San Francisco, even though there's greater balance in life, still long hours, lots of pressure. Hours were less. New York were 60-hour standard days. San Francisco, probably 45-hour standard days, right? So definitely a different scale, but the pressures were just as high. And I kind of started reflecting. I was like, okay, in my 50s, right? I have three boys. My health is suffering. My happiness, I'm not completely happy with my career. My bank account isn't full. And at the end of the day, you look and say, well, what is it worth it? Like, did all this sacrifice, all this struggle, all this work, was it worth it? My conclusion was no. I mean, had I dropped dead that day of a heart attack, it would be more of an inconvenience for my boss than anything else. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was still getting text in the hospital saying, hey, where are you? Deadline, right? It doesn't let up, And I'm like, you know what? I think I'd be better off if I put 60 hours in my own business, right? Than 60 hours in some patting somebody else's pocket.
And I think that's what always has driven people to think about franchising. I'm
Sure.
very similar to you. I started my career in advertising in New York City and
Ah,
came to
there
San
you
Francisco
go.
in marketing as well. And it's a grind. And
Yeah.
when you're young, it's exciting and very fulfilling, even if the cash isn't there. But you
That's
do
right.
get to that point where you start to think about work-life balance. Life doesn't go on
Right.
forever, and your time with your kids doesn't go on forever. And
Exactly.
so, for a while, I thought about franchising. But again, so I'm excited to hear what you
So
think
I met
about
with a
that
franchise
stuff.
consultant with Franchoice, but that's the group I'm with now. And I was excited to learn about all the different opportunities. And it's fun because at that point, but the big question was, okay, what do you want to do when you grow up? I mean, literally with franchising, you can get into any business category with zero experience. I've been marketing for 25 years. If I want to get in finance, to be like, no, your resume doesn't qualify you. If I want to get into, technology, no, your resume, I mean, you get pigeonholed. In franchising, you can literally, I can get into dance. I can get into roofing. I
I
can get
love
into
that.
senior care. I can get into chiropractics without even being a chiropractor, right? Because I own the business. So
Well, like
I
you say, your tagline behind you, more passion. I think that's what people, especially when you get to your 50s, if you haven't found that passion, you're starting to think of like, how can I marry passion to work? And I like this the line of thinking.
Or often your passion fades. I mean, if you do anything for 25 years, you're not going to be as passionate as you were from day one. I mean, I was very passionate about what I did, right? Until I wasn't. And that's what I say about to people, but corporate's great until it's not. Then what? Okay. And so I wanted to own a business. I didn't know what business I wanted to own. So franchising was the next best choice because it's a proven model, an established operating system. And I had the freedom to get into any business I wanted to, and they would teach me how to be a business owner in that business. So if I believed in healthcare, like for example, I have a mental health clinic in my franchise portfolio, right? I mean, there's a mental health crisis. I mean, in this country. And if my area had very little access to good mental health, I can bring that clinic into my neighborhood and boom, what do I do? Hire a therapist, right? That is a semi-absentee owner business. All I have to do is do payroll, manage the manager, right? And manage the business. I'm not meeting with patients. I'm not meeting with clients. That gets to the idea of being a business owner means your employees are making money for you. That's the big paradigm shift. When you're a worker bee, you're making money for somebody else. Your hours are on the clock and they're cracking the whip because they know your hour of productivity is generating them money. So they're going to want you to work as hard as, and as much as you're willing to work. When you own a business, your employees are generating that revenue for you. You know, each therapist under that clinic can make you 80 to 100 grand in profit. So if you have three therapists working in your business, four therapists in your business, that's, you know, close to 400
So I'm assuming in that model, there's somebody who does a franchise, a model about mental health, and they give you the
grand.
guidelines and you pay
Yes,
them a certain amount
absolutely.
of money to do to own their brand and use their marketing
Well,
assets.
that's what a franchise is,
Right.
right? A franchise is it's an established model that's proven, usually proven by either the parent company that launched. And that's what, so usually franchises start with somebody who says, hey, I want to start this kind of business. They start the business, they grow it to a certain amount to prove its success and to learn the business. So most of these franchise parent companies have been around for 5 to 20 years. And what they're doing is they're sharing their experiences so that you know what to do and what not to do. So if you do think about any startup, half of your startup is spent trying to figure out how do I do this? Okay, I have a theory. I want to do a software and I want to do this, right? So you do it and you know you try it and it either works or it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, you try something else. And that's how a startup works. And it doesn't matter what kind of startup, selling furniture, making furniture, whatever. In a franchise, someone's already learned all the do's and don'ts. They've already had all the growing pains. You're going to get the cheat sheet on how to be successful. And from day one, they say, these are the 10 steps to success. Do this and this, and that's how you're going to generate the most revenue quickly.
So
All right.
I guess I get that part of it, but I
Okay.
guess a lot of people are probably afraid of like, yeah, the ideal situation is you join a franchise group and they give you
Sure.
all the things and you pay them some nominal amount of money and next
Right.
thing you know, you're rich. But how do you figure out like which ones you can trust and how
Sure.
much money does it cost to start these efforts when you're not sure that they'll even work?
So when I talk about 4,500 businesses, right, the investment ranges from 75,000 to 2 million plus.
Okay.
Okay. So that's how wide the range is. Okay. Service businesses average maybe 150 grand all in, franchise fee, vehicle, tools, working capital, you know, brick and mortar, like any kind of store, you know, maybe 500 average. Okay, that includes your build out. So any build out's about 300 grand, right? Between sheetrock and plywood and all that stuff. Okay, so that, you know, it's not ridiculous amounts of money. They're not $1 million, right? McDonald's, yeah, you're talking close to $2 million, right? That's a different category, right? That's a global, well-established, huge footprint. Like that's
And they
ridiculous.
don't want to see anybody fail.
They don't. And not only that is there's really very few, they're very selective.
Very, yeah,
You
restricted.
know, you can't, I mean, I don't even know if there is even anything left to buy, right? They're rolling out some new concepts, but it's pretty saturated. Anyway, you know, number one thing to understand in any business is there's no guarantees, right? So what you're trying to do is you're trying to stack the deck. You're trying to, you know, buy a business that has the best odds of doing well, okay? At the end of the day, it's all up to you. So, same thing with a stock market, right? You're going to buy stocks. And can I guarantee that if you invest in a portfolio, you're going to make 10 or 20% on your money? But you got to do research. You got to see what the past performance was, right? You got to understand what are the circumstances around this stock? What are plans for the future? I mean, you know, same thing with the franchise. Like, is it a business that's going to have relevance in 10 years? You know, you have trendy businesses. Like I will say, you know, bubble tea, in my opinion, is a trendy business. I
Sure.
mean, like everyone's drinking it right now, but is someone going to drink it 5 years from now as with as much vigor as they are now?
Right.
Like think about Froyo, right? I mean,
Yeah.
10 years ago, Froyo was like the boom. There was a Froyo place in every corner. 5 years later, there's none. I can't even find one in my neighborhood.
I know. I want one right now, and I can't find one except
Exactly.
one in San Francisco.
Right? Those are trendy businesses, right? But think about plumbing. You're always going to need plumbing. Okay. There's some core businesses, like think about mental health. I mean, going back to that example, I mean, it's not like a lot of people grow up saying, I want to own a mental health clinic. Well, maybe if you want to be a therapist, but that's a lot of schooling and that's a lot of, like, I don't even know if I have the mental wherewithal for me to be a therapist, right? But for me to hire three therapists because I want to bring them into my community, very different model. And all I got to do is, if you follow that model, it's advertising driven. Every franchise is advertising driven, which means that all the franchises in my portfolio are led by a VP of marketing. They know how to advertise. And if you advertise, let's say your territory's, 250,000 population, if you advertise to that 250,000 people every day, and you have the mechanism to respond to everyone who says, yeah, I'd like to get a quote, or I'd like to learn about your mental health services. My son is dealing with anxiety. I'm feeling anxiety. I'm feeling depression. Can we meet? Can we have a session? Can you tell me more about your services? And then you have that whole mechanism. You have a front desk that will make an appointment. They'll come and see your therapist. Your therapist will then present, what their options are to meet them. And then boom, now you have a potential for a client. That's how it is. It's about the funnel, right? Now, what's your role as an owner in that business? I manage the marketing budget. I work with the VP of marketing saying, yeah, this is how much I want to spend. This is what, the VP of marketing will say, hey, this is what's working all over the country. Do you want to apply this to your area? Yeah, but let's tweak it. Let's try this. Let's try that. Whatever. So I do that. And then all of a sudden, I have a front desk person, or maybe it's me, who responds to those inquiries. Tell me about your services. How much are your rates? How many therapists do you have? You know
Yeah,
what I
all
mean?
the typical
And
infrastructure.
then you qualify, and they teach you how to qualify patients, right?
So
And then
how if but if somebody's trying to find out a franchise opportunity that hopefully meshes with their passions, how do they know that like a company that would help you get into the mental health business is reputable, is going to stand with you, is going to stand
yeah.
this isn't blowing smoke when they make up when they tell you what their numbers are? I mean,
Yeah.
I think everybody's really
Sure.
afraid of fraud in the franchise business
Sure.
once you get beyond the ones that we all, brand
Yeah.
names.
Well, that's a good question. So my role as a franchise consultant, I don't charge anything for my services, right? My role is to educate people. And my role is to, I have a portfolio of businesses that are within our brokerage franchise. And we understand those companies. We evaluate those companies. The management team in my company check for, lawsuits, fraudulent behavior. They check to make sure the management team is a good management team. There's good operating systems, that they're following the FTC guidelines. This is a federally regulated industry. I mean, it's
Okay.
not easy to, create, to conduct fraud,
Good.
right?
Interesting.
I mean, you can, of course, everyone does, right? But like, if, there's guidelines to try to prevent that. There's something called a franchise disclosure document, which is every franchise has to, by law, create a franchise disclosure document and reveal it to any candidate interested by law. It's 200 pages. It lists lawsuits. It lists businesses that went out of business that are in a franchise. It lists all fees, all costs. It shows historical earnings. I mean, it lists every franchisee. So you can actually have phone numbers to call and talk to people. I mean, this whole process is about investigation. And so I guide people in this decision because there's three factors that I've determined to be the best factors to pick the right business. Economics. Can you afford the business, and can it make you the money you want to make? Because that's why we're in it, right? We're not in it for fun. We want to make money. So not all businesses make the same amount of money. Some cap out five figures, some cap out of six figures, some have a max of seven figures, right? So that's number one. Can it make you the money you want to make, and can you afford it? Okay. Number two is conviction. You got to believe in the services you deliver. I get a lot of people every day call me and say, you know what? I want the business that's going to make me the most money. That's it. I'm like, no, we can't do that. Right. That is important. That's number one, economics. But number two, you got to believe in what you do. I mean, period. Like, I'm not a smoker. If someone told me I can make $1 million a month selling cigarettes, I couldn't do it. Right. Because there's no way with a straight face or with a guilty conscience, without a guilty conscience, sell people cigarettes, because I don't believe in it. So conviction. Number three is passion. there's scientific evidence that says if you're more passionate about what you do, you're going to do better at it. Period. So ideally, you want to find a business. So you look at that tagline, more freedom, more money, more passion. It's true, right? You want to try to find something that you either, and your passions are so broadly defined. Passion could be bringing a service to your community that is void in your community or is not being delivered. Passion could be providing employment, right? Passion could be, doing something that you love, So when I picked an indoor cycling studio as my business, why? A, number one, it's a recurring revenue stream business. It's membership based. I have 400 members. I can predict each month how much I'm going to make, right? Number two, it's a category I believe in. I believe in fitness. I believe in proactive health management.
This is like SoulCycle, that type of thing, or is it
That's right. That's right.
pretty
It's
similar?
gonna, it, you know, fitness is going to stay forever. It's going to be here for a long time. People more and more realize the importance of being fit, right? And so that's conviction. I believe in it. I can sell the benefits of indoor cycling to anybody because I believe in it. It's low impact, high cardio. You know what I mean? And anyone can do it, any age, any gender, And number three is passion. I love cycling. I love fitness. I go to the studio 3, 4 days a week just to take classes. I call it a passion business, a lifestyle business.
So if somebody were thinking about this seriously, I mean, $75,000 is not outrageous in this world, but it is a, it's a fairly large amount of money. If they don't have $75,000 or $150,000 or maybe $300,000, is there financing that's available through a lot of these franchise programs? And is that really an avenue?
The SBA is created to help stimulate small business investment. So SBA stands
That's a franchise
Small Business
company.
Administration is a
Oh,
governing
the
entity.
Small Business
The
Administration.
Small Business Administration is designed to encourage banks to lend money to startups. The government will guarantee part of the loan, which makes it palatable for banks to invest in startup businesses. If you walk into a Chase bank right now and said, "Hey, I want to do a startup," they'll say, "Great, congratulations. Can I borrow some money?" No, absolutely not. They won't lend money to a startup business, whether it's a franchise or not. With the SBA guarantee, which is a government guarantee to the loan, banks are willing to invest in startup businesses, right? So that's a big way. They'll fund up to 80% of your franchise, of
So
your.
is that only true for certain franchise opportunities that the
Certain,
SBA has identified, or?
certain franchises are approved by the SBA, some are not.
And also, we started out with this the conversation talking about the discrimination your father endured. Is this a route for people who are maybe on the margins for whatever reason, race, ethnicity, or possibly
Absolutely.
criminal record, or something that's holding them back from actually
Well,
getting a job?
the criminal record is a little sensitive one. I can't really talk a lot to that. I know the questionnaire says, have you been convicted of a felony and all this stuff? So there is some sensitivity because, a franchisor is very selective of who they bring in. Now, again, I'm not going to
You're
say
right.
racism or anything, but what they want is somebody who's going to be a good business owner because they're not in it. Okay, the franchise doesn't make money by selling you a franchise. They make money through royalties, which is a percentage of your gross. And it may be as small as 3%. The average is like 5%. So what's 5% of nothing? Nothing.
Yeah, they
Right.
want you to
So
succeed.
they're incentivized to help you be successful because the more successful you are as a franchise owner, the more they make. Okay. So that's how they make their money. And so their whole business is about coaching and encouraging and supporting people to be successful. If you fail, they fail. So they're not going to hire someone or sell the business to somebody who they feel is going to fail. And there are a lot of factors that contribute to that.
So this isn't an immediate like, oh, I've decided franchise found the perfect business, works for my passions and everything else, and now I just go and get one. So
That's
isn't
right.
necessarily a route out of
You have to be approved to buy a franchise. That's
all the
part of my
process.
process as well. Part of my job is to educate you and help you get approved, right? Because I have a relationship with the franchisors from the standpoint of we communicate on a regular basis. If there's certain signs and issues that they may have with somebody, I'll try to work on to address it. Like there's some people who come into the system who are extremely rich. And sometimes people come in extremely rich refuse to listen. Okay. They think they know everything. They come in. Franchisors hate know-it-alls. The reason why is because they're not willing to listen to the model and to learn how to run this business because they come in saying, "Yeah, I got tons of money. I just want to own that business." And they go in and they don't go to the training, they don't learn the business, and they fail. And they say, "Oh, this is a crappy business. You sold me a piece of junk." Well, you know, if you're not going to run it the way it's supposed to be run, it's not going to succeed. So they really want people who are open-minded, who are willing to learn, who are willing to put a little bit of effort into making sure that the business is being done the way it's supposed to be done. Okay.
So, Irvin, is there a type of person that you would, I mean, is it college education, is there, but or is that required?
Not
Is there
at
a
all. No.
list of
I
things that
mean,
you would say would be a minimum for somebody to even consider this an option?
yeah. I mean, you can't be afraid of hard work. So here's the way I like to describe to people. If you're the kind of person that can't wake up to get to work on time, right? You need to have a job, because that's what a job's there for. A boss is there to tell you, get your butt in the office 8 o'clock, do this and do this, and you can't go home till you get it done. Okay. If you're a self-starter, that's what you need to be to own your own business. Okay. If you have no problem waking up, if you have no problem setting goals and achieving goals, if you have no problem, you know, doing what you are committed to do, then you're a perfect personality. If you can't wake up and get to work, you know, you might have a motivation issue. And if you have a motivation issue, you should not own a business, because
So, how
it
about age, education,
has
experience?
nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Nope. I have a guy who is a doctor. You know, great person. I talked to a guy who never finished college. Great person. You know, it's all about what you want to accomplish and how much you're willing to work to get it done. You know what I mean? It's about focus. It's about organization. It's about communication. It's about basic skills. I mean, you know, that's what you need. You know, it doesn't mean you have to put 60 hours into something. You know, I mean, I do subscribe to the whole idea of work smarter, not harder. You know, and that's what a good business owner does. One of your big questions is, if I buy a franchise, am I a slave to my business? It's what you create. I have two owners of a franchise, same business. One person works till 2 a.m., one person leaves at 2 p.m. Okay. The difference is one person hired a team that they put in place and they empowered to run the business. One person is a micromanager who doesn't trust anybody and they have to do it themselves. Okay. Two fundamentally different personalities, same business, right? One's working themselves ragged. It's all about what you create. It really.
So maybe that's is that a, if I don't know what our typical audience looks like, but let's think of them as maybe middle managers or senior lower managers. Would that be a good test? Like, how am I doing as a manager today? Like,
Yep.
what kind of manager am I? Could I manage people and get the most out of them like I do for my corporate
Yep.
world?
I would say 75% of my clients are mid-level executives who've had 15 years of corporate experience. That is fantastic experience, because during that time, you've probably hired, fired, and managed many people, you know, but you've done it for a big corporation, right? Now you're doing it for yourself, and it's even more acute that you follow certain rules. For example, in a small business, the motto I try to encourage people to have is hire slow, fire fast. Right? Why that? Why that? Hire slow. You meet multiple people, check their references, check their background, right? Make sure they're good people. Make sure they don't have criminal records and they haven't, like, you know, robbed the business that they were last at or didn't show up for work a lot. You know, check references, check their backgrounds, talk to multiple people. Even, you know, most of people, when you own a business, they're like, they hire the first person that looks right, because they're so eager. They're like, "Oh my, oh God, you're hired."
Be going.
Fight that urge, right? Talk to two, three other people. Have multiple people talk. I always have my wife interview because I trust her judgment more than I do mine. You know, she has a certain intuition, right? Take your time. Make sure they're the right person. And, you know, it's not good enough to be three out of four qualities. Make sure they're all four qualities that, or whatever you're looking for, is right. The other one is fire fast, which means that in a small business, you know, you got to communicate. You got to evaluate every month. You do a review. Okay. This is what you're doing right. This is what you're doing wrong. This is what I'd like to see you improve on. If they're not showing improvement after the first month, right, it's a red flag. If they're not showing improvement after the second month, huge red flag, right? I'm a three strike rule. By the third month, if they haven't improved, fire them and hire someone else. Because a small business can't survive because every employee is critical. You know what I mean? If they're not doing their job, that means they're not generating revenue, you know? And this is most important for more like the manager levels, right? Your GM, your manager, your assistant manager. I mean, some of the worker bees maybe, but even at that point, you can't, a small business, everyone is important, right? It's not like a big company with 3,000 people and someone can hide in the shadows. When you've got a team of four or five people, everyone's gonna carry their weight. And
It's pretty obvious, yeah.
I tell this to people, if you don't do your job, you know what it is? It puts an unfair burden on the guy who's coming in after you. You want the person in front of you doing that to you, right? The answer is no. You got
So
to
what I'm
care.
hearing is maybe the most important qualification is results-based management skills.
That's right.
A track record you feel comfortable with. I think that's really helpful. Just one last question is what you do. You're a franchise consultant and you help people choose franchise, but it sounds like you also have franchises yourself. And how do
Yeah.
those two services work together?
What makes me different is that I'm also a franchise owner. Okay. Not every franchise consultant is a franchise owner. And to me, that's a little disingenuous, right? So my analogy is this. So you go to a military recruiter and say, yeah, I want to join the Marines because I heard that, it's exciting and I'm going to be a man and all this stuff. And the recruiter's like, absolutely, you should definitely sign up. You're gonna see the world, you're gonna learn skills, and then you ask the recruiter, so how many years did you serve? Oh, I didn't serve, but you should. Okay.
That would
Here
be
they're
it.
telling, I could not see how a franchise consultant
Sure.
who's
Yeah, that
never
doesn't
owned a
make sense.
business can tell somebody what it's like to own a franchise. They don't know. A lot of what I do is I consult, generally speaking, right? This is how the industry works. Here's the categories. Here are the opportunities. But I also bring a lot of my personal experience into the consultation, into the guidance. What it's like for my wife and I to work together. A huge question. I mean, most of us who are married have never had the privilege of working with our spouse, right? And it could be a blessing,
Or it could be a curse.
or it could be, so you don't know, but those are the things that I can share.
You may know a little
I
bit.
know, I know.
You may have an
I
idea.
have learned to really appreciate her for like she's a whiz, and I am not. And the first time she did payroll, I like gave her the biggest hug ever. I mean, you're like, wow.
Complementary skills. I know a
Exactly.
lot of, there's a lot of tax advantages to bringing the kids in to, at some.
Every one of my kids have worked the studio.
Yeah, because it's great
Every one of
training,
them.
teaches
It
them,
is.
keeps them close to you. Yeah. And a lot of write-offs there. Well,
Yeah.
this is really interesting. What is your business model then? Obviously you make money on the franchises. Are you compensated for the consulting part?
Yeah. So the franchisors in my portfolio pay me to provide education and guidance, they pay me to qualify people. Because they don't want to waste their time, right? So I am willing to meet with anybody, right? And that's because, I'm always open to educating people. I met with two people this week who just didn't have the money. And I said, listen, this is what you need to save, because it does take money to make money. I mean, it is not a poor man's game. I mean, I have people who, everyone wants a business, but if you can't afford it, you shouldn't do it,
But it does sound like it could be a poor man's game if you have the skills and you could convince a franchise company to
No, you need, I
keep going.
mean, you need like I said, the SBA, the most they'll fund is 80%, right? So you need 20% down,
Well,
right?
80% of 75K, though, I mean, that's
No, but
a huge.
75K, okay, 75K, let me correct that. 75K is for a franchise where you're pretty much buying yourself a job. Okay, there's some businesses that are consulting-based businesses or sales-based businesses. And the reason why it's so low is because you paid a franchise fee, you paid for the training, and you're the main employee. Okay, so like business coaching, I have that. Executive recruiting, you're a recruiter, HR recruiter. I have senior care consultants, right? So you actually help guide people into what senior care services are available in your area. It's you working as a sole entrepreneur. The reason why it's so low cost is because you're not paying payroll to somebody else. You know what I
And you
mean?
don't have the growth opportunity because it's all.
It's like buying yourself a job. Okay. Now it's not a bad option because you don't have a boss breathing down your neck. One of the key things I learned about the pressure is between being an employee versus being an employee, or being employee versus being an employer. External pressure is extremely negative. Someone telling you, hey, you need to jump at 3 o'clock. and you need to jump 10 times at 3 o'clock. It's like there's a huge, and and you worry about it because they say, hey, when you come in on Monday, you better be ready to jump 20 times, starting at 8 o'clock. You're like, oh my God, you're freaking out on Sunday with anxiety and all this because someone has this external pressure on you. Internal pressure is very different. Internal pressure is like, okay, I need to get up and accomplish these things. I want to accomplish these financial goals. It's like I also define it as motivation. Internal pressure is motivation, whereas external pressure is pressure. They're two very different things. They may sound similar, but they're different. I still have some anxiety over my goals and my internal pressure, but it is about half the impact of the external pressure. Like I still can sleep at night, right? When I worked for somebody else, I couldn't sleep at night.
Yeah, well, I know that from the advertising world. It's a
Yeah.
lot
It's a very
of
deadline.
anxiety on Sunday nights.
And so it's a very different pressure, right? So, that was something I had to experience to really understand the differences between the two, because like literally, if I wanted to take Monday off, it's my choice to take Monday off. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what sells people on the idea of franchising is being your own boss, but it
Well,
sounds like
here's the thing. I've also learned to appreciate the 7-day work week and the 7-day leisure week. Okay. In the professional world, you sign your life away Monday through Friday, and you only have 2 days to live for yourself. Like literally, right? Because, by the time you get home from work, you're cranky, the kids are cranky, you spend an hour, you have dinner, and then the kids are in bed. And you know what I mean? It's like, did you really spend time with the family? Getting back to being a dad. What, since I've become a business owner, I never missed one sport event or any orchestra concert or a parent-teacher meeting with my kids.
Right.
Well, because it was my priority. I put that in my calendar. I didn't ask for permission, right? Prior to that, I had to ask my boss. Not only did I have to ask my boss, I had to commute 30 minutes from work to school and then try to get back.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's
Right?
part of what we talk about every week is how to, create more time. I mean, for some people, it's a conscious choice. For other people, they're tied to that job and a boss that won't let them be out of their sight for a few minutes at a
Exactly.
time.
I mean, I'd rather work a couple of hours on a Saturday morning
Yeah, and be
by
surrounded.
a couple of hours on a Tuesday morning to go see my kids' orchestra concert. You don't have that choice when you're working for somebody else. You gotta beg and plead for that time, you know.
Well, this has really been very illuminating and puts to bed some of my long-held prejudices, which I knew were very much out of date. We always end these shows with three questions. One is whether you had a mantra. You got three boys.
Three boys, yep.
Three boys. So did you? I mean, boys are different. I have a boy and a girl. But did you ever have a mantra that you said to yourself quietly that got you through some of the more frustrating times when they were teens or 3-year-olds or 2-year-olds?
Yeah, to some degree, like my brother, I was the youngest of four kids, and my brother always told me, as crazy as life is going to get, remember to enjoy each phase of life because it's going to be different each phase, and you're going to look back and realize that, right? So I tried to remind myself that, hey, this is just one phase. This is just one phase, on the frustrating stuff, you know what I mean? Like the tantrums and all that stuff, and you get through it, So that's one.
That's a wise brother.
It is, yeah. And it's great that I'm glad he shared that with me.
The second one is there if there's any piece of advice, maybe it's very similar to this for younger dads
It's the
as they go
same
through the journey.
advice. Enjoy each phase because my oldest is 22. Okay. And I look back and I miss the days when, I was taking him to soccer practice. And I missed the days where, we would go to soccer practice and I'd take him for an ice cream. I mean, now it's so hard to get the time from the kids to spend with you. And so my, advice is appreciate every minute you have with them because it is fleeting. I mean, soon they're going to be out of the nest, right? Once they get out of college and have, a spouse and all that stuff, we're gonna hope to have time with them. Enjoy the time when they're with you. Enjoy the time you have when they're just like they're relying on you because they won't always be in that position. And whether it's driving you nuts or you're tired or whatever, try to enjoy
Last
that.
long.
Try to enjoy that because you won't appreciate it until you lose it. And that's almost like everything in life, and don't wait to that time to truly look back and appreciate it, which goes back to, So many people sign their life away to a job because they think they have to. They're like, oh, I have to. I mean, I have to work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. I mean, that's just life. The reality today is the paradigm's changed. I think the pandemic has caused people to realize that I don't have to give up my life to earn a living.
And there's no longer the security there was
There
when we were
isn't.
coming up. I mean,
There isn't. That's right.
Third question is, if you have a challenge for dads to think of for the next week, either to be a better parent or maybe to look at a paradigm shift of how they're thinking about their career.
Yeah, it's, all of us are afraid to look at something new, right? We're all afraid of change. And my challenge is get uncomfortable, because if you're uncomfortable, change is uncomfortable. And if you're not changing, that you're stagnant, And so if you're comfortable, that's a problem. So I challenge dads to get uncomfortable. Like, consider an alternative career, consider a franchise, consider a business owner, being a business owner, consider drawing the line. One thing I look back at, and I'm type A, I never drew the line. My boss would say, jump, I'd say, how high? Right. And I wouldn't say, do I have to or why? Right. I mean, and that's why I worked 60-hour weeks. I could never draw the line. I would say, create boundaries, right? Be bold enough to go to your boss and draw boundaries and say, you know what? I can't do that because I have this commitment with my child.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't even know that you can ask those kind of questions or draw those
No,
boundaries.
they don't. I mean, I never thought to do it, right? I just assumed that, hey, what you own my life, right? Because I get that the paycheck, right? And
Especially
so,
right now where unemployment is low, you may have more power in the workforce
yeah,
than you think.
I think you do.
Well, Irving, this has really been a very interesting time together and learned a lot. And I appreciate you joining us. You can find Irving at franguidance.com, and we'll put in the show notes the Calendly link if you want to set up a is it a half an hour meeting with you or an hour long meeting?
Yeah, I mean, it could be 10 minutes, could be 30 minutes. I'm happy to talk to anybody. I mean, like I said, I like to view what I do as paying it forward, helping educate people the way I was educated, but also just to give you a little bit of information. Don't let assumptions and potentially misperceptions stop you, what you have in terms of, hey, this is what I understand it to be. Talk to somebody, learn about what it's like. And, it's not for everybody. I will say that,
Yeah, doesn't sound like it.
And if it is right for you, then great, consider it. If it's not for you, at least you know, and keep doing what you're doing or find some other options,
That's great. All right, so you can find more of my coaching services at greatdad.com/coaching or my positive intelligence class, which I'm trying to fill a pod right now at greatdad.com/PQ. You can also take my gratitude course on finding gratitude, which I think is an incredible way to find more happiness in your life at greatdad.com/gratitude. And we'll give you 50% off as a podcast listener with the code podcast50. All right, thanks. And stay focused on your kids. Like Irving says, the time goes fast, and what seems like it's a irritation today will become something you really desperately miss just, in a
And
short number of
it
years.
seems like they're going to be little for eternity, and before a blink of an eye,
Exactly.
they're going to be grown and out of the home.
Okay, thanks and take care.
Take care.